Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to another episode of, wait for it, Millennial Money.
Millennial Money.
I thought you forgot for a second. Wait for it. What's it called?
Yeah. What is it again? What's millennial dollars?
Millennial cents?
Millennial cash? No, that's not it. Welcome back to another episode of Boomer Box today. We got a lot to talk about with the market, and we're filming this right after earnings. We got crazy numbers for you. The entire stock market crash seems to have almost reversed.
Yeah.
I mean, things are quickly approaching the upside.
Ever since we did the candle thing last week, gentlemen.
Do you think that's it?
I think, yeah, ever since then it was like...
No, you know what I think it was? Someone selling their...
No, no, Andre, no, don't go there,
Andre,
man.
Andre, we did the seance for a reason.
Oh, gosh. It's earnings craziness, gentlemen. Yeah, everybody needs to go buy an iPhone because Apple saved the entire stock market.
Yeah.
They reported after the bell Thursday, and their earnings were so insanely good that ever since then, the market moved up big Friday, Monday, yesterday, with some massive moves, and today, and then after hours, not sure if you guys saw, Google McDougal saved the market as well.
But not only that, Google is only a fraction of it. So I bought some more Google.
Okay.
Yep. And they announced a 20-to-1 stock split.
Oh my gosh. Now everyone's going
to
jump on it.
No. How crazy is that? Now I look back at this and I think, well, you know, technically they're not adding any value by splitting the stock, except people are able to buy options for a lot cheaper now, so that's going to add in a big surge of demand. But I think psychologically, look back at what that did to Apple and Tesla, and something like Google, I can only imagine. I don't think they're as hypey as Tesla, but for a company with solid fundamentals, even though we have been talking about our ad revenue declining, apparently Google's doing well everywhere else.
Right. Yeah.
And
YouTube was a trouble spot. YouTube numbers weren't that impressive. And I will say, I was watching the after hours action in Google. And initially, when the numbers came out, it was up like 3-4%. It was doing pretty good.
Yeah.
The stock split came out, like you said, Graham. Yeah. And next thing you know, it was up like 7-8% almost instantly as soon as that flashed on CNBC, Google 20-to-1 stock split.
Now, Jeremy, do you know offhand what the earnings year over year were in comparison to like last year for Google?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but everything was pretty much better, considerably better year over year. However, YouTube numbers came in light. Analysts were not impressed by that. Google search, believe it or not, was the thing that everybody was super impressed with.
Hmm.
So I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but Google search, believe it or not, was impressive. YouTube was a lagger. The Pixel phone actually had a really good quarter, believe it or not, which is interesting. Which I will say, if you force me off of Apple, I would get the Pixel phone. I don't know. What do you think, Andre?
No, stick with iOS, man.
Oh, I would, yeah. But I'm saying, let's say you were forced to not have an Apple product. What do you go with? I would go with a Google Pixel over
BlackBerry.
A Samsung. BlackBerry. Oh my
goodness. What's the one, the flip phone that you it used to have the keypad, you have to flip it.
The Razor?
No, it's not a Razor.
The egg phone? Was like a little egg phone? You like pops up?
No, like Paris Hilton did the ads with it a while ago. Remember the flip phone? You'd have the screen and you'd flip it up and have a keyboard.
That's right. The TV looking thing.
Kickback or kickstand? I don't
know. What's it called?
Was it a Sony's product?
The Sidekick.
Sidekick. That's it.
All the coolest kids had that in high school, man. You were a big baller.
I remember. I thought they were so cool because they'd take it out, it looked like a phone, and they'd just... And just flip it. It's like, oh, that's so cool. You know, type away and then flip it back.
Sure.
Oh, gosh.
Wow. Man. So, are you guys buying anything? I know you're buying PayPal, maybe.
Potentially.
Okay.
So, what did I buy today? Well, I've been buying the S&P just as usual. Same. I bought Bitcoin, Ethereum. When Ethereum and Bitcoin both dropped the other day.
What level?
What do you mean, what level?
What price level?
36 for Bitcoin, and I think it was 25 for Ethereum.
What are you at right now, holdings wise, Bitcoin?
Well, everything dropped. At the peak, I was close to a million. Then things dropped, but I kept buying in, I think, 600 grand.
You know what Bitcoin needs?
550, 600?
A 20-to-1 split. Could you imagine that? 100-to-1 split. We're splitting it, guys.
It's just called buying less of it.
Wait, how many Satoshis are there in a Bitcoin? Is it a million or something? I forget how many millions it was, but yeah, technically there's a lot of splits in Bitcoin. You don't have to buy a whole Bitcoin, Jeremy.
Yeah, I know. But you technically don't have to buy a whole share of Google either. Most brokerages now, they allow you to buy fractional shares.
Oh, I see it. So instead of a Bitcoin being 35,000 to split it, and now it's 3,500 for a Bitcoin. Yeah. So they're worth less.
Or even $300. People will be like, oh, it's such a good deal.
That would work in reverse, though, I feel like, for Bitcoin. I think some of the value is in the high number, that if people felt, oh, wow, it's 3,500 now, they just see it as like a crash.
It's interesting because I would be the idiot that buys Google because he sees it cheaper. I'm like, oh, now I can buy it finally.
It's true.
Even though it's just a psychological effect. So do you guys think that stock splits are going to become the next mechanic for companies to... Because that's what we said last year when everything was kind of going down. Like, oh, stock splits, that's going to be the thing.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think it is, at a certain level, I think it seems unattainable. Tesla was really like trying to appeal to the person who doesn't need to, buy a $1,500 stock. They wanted it to be, approachable. And even though it approaches that again, I think taking that approach worked really well for him. Same with Apple. Right. They don't want this to be a $1,000 stock. And I think Amazon has to be next.
What could come back in fashion, Andre, also is dividends. You know, a lot of these companies, even Google, has never paid a dividend. Maybe they start considering, hey, you know what? We have so much money, and we're an established company nowadays.
Well, wouldn't you say that dividend stocks are going to perform or tend to perform a little bit better this year than, say, some of the tech stuff?
Yeah, they have so far. Yeah. I would say that will only stay true if the market stays in a
down,
a bad place, because that's when everybody floods to the dividend stocks for safety. Yeah. So if this trend we're on now continues forward, which Tom Lee, who's always on CNBC, he's known as kind of being bullish.
Funstrat?
Yeah. So he said it's going to be a violent rally in February. Violent
for Bitcoin.
Says. No. Oh, no, actually, he is bullish on Bitcoin, too.
Bullish on Bitcoin,
yeah. But also a violent rally in terms of the market. Mm. So, but one of the things was Bitcoin. He's really, really bullish on. He says this is going to be a violent rally based upon the start to the year, how we sold off so heavy. Yeah. So far, he's looking
good,
but we'll see.
That's what I said a couple months ago when I told you guys that hedge funds are going to sell off towards the end of the year. They're going to collect all their profits, all their fees, and then at the beginning of the year, they're going to have somewhere to put that money, which makes sense.
Yeah. You know where they're putting it, by the way? Our sponsor, FTX, just raised $400 million. Yeah. They're now actually one of the most valuable privately held cryptocurrency exchanges in the world right now.
Actually, their NFT platform's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so cool. You could just like swipe and then buy and sell for free, essentially.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Wow. The great thing about FTX, besides the fact that they're also sponsoring today's episode, is the fact that you could buy and sell cryptocurrency for way cheaper than pretty much any other platform. And their app is phenomenal, by the way. Started using it.
And you get the best pricing through it, right?
Yeah.
And you can track all of your crypto in the app too.
Yeah, over 10,000 different cryptocurrencies that you could track from their app. No minimum fixed fees on transactions, and they have a lot to offer. So if you guys are interested, use the link down below in the description. We have a custom link for you. Plus, you could also set up a recurring buy to dollar cost average into the markets like I do.
That's huge!
Huge! Huge! That's huge!
Gosh, guys, that joke is so 2020.
Oh, man. But you know what's not a joke is their crypto debit card that's accepted at millions of merchants worldwide, and you could get free crypto on every trade you do over $10.
Wow.
So again, if you guys are interested, feel free to use the link down below in the description.
So Jeremy, I heard you bought PayPal.
Yes.
Did you convince Graham to buy into it?
Well, no, Graham's already owned it. Yeah, Graham already owned
PayPal.
Where
do I get on this stock list? I'm not in this stock chat.
God, there is no stock chat. It's called looking at the market and trying to find a good value in companies that you use day to day. And when you see something where people are panicking for, in my opinion, you know, not a lot of reason, you buy in. I've held PayPal now for probably over a year and a half. And I think my average price with PayPal, I'm down now, but I think my average price for them was about at 176, 170s. Yeah. So at 150s, which is where it dropped to immediately after, it's very tempting.
Mm. Yeah.
I think a lot of panic was around that SEC rule that that they were going to be giving 1099s to people who had more than $600 in transactions. I think that whole thing is just...
But then they did the whole gift option, right? Is that what they did?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. So for those that aren't aware, when you go on PayPal, the big issue was that the IRS is now going to be forcing them to send you a 1099 if you have more than $600 in transactions in a year. And everyone's like, well, I'm going to stop using PayPal now. Well, the way around it is that if you're not paying for goods and services... which means you have to check that little box on there. If it's between friends and family, it's exempt. So all these little things where it's like, you know, I'm going to buy dinner. Jeremy, just PayPal me the $20 for your portion. That stuff's not going to be taxed unless Jeremy decides to be like, oh, well, Graham, this is for goods and services. In which case, I'll be upset if you do that.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to buy PayPal right now because I bought it right before the dip of 24%. Do you remember that on Millennial Money, I actually bought $10,000 worth?
I remember this.
Do you remember that?
Yes.
This is when you were buying it, and you're like, guys, PayPal is a great
trader. Just to be clear, this is the first time I've ever bought PayPal in my life after hours. Yes, in my entire life.
Wait, so, after hours or first time you've ever bought PayPal?
No, in general, I've never bought one share of PayPal in my life. This is the first time.
So you were just pumping it.
I think PayPal under 200 is easy money over the next 5 years, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So, but I just started buying after hours, and I might build into like a multi six figure position. So, in terms of if you're wondering,
that means it's going to go down.
Yeah.
Don't buy yet.
It's another tattooed chef, guys.
It's going to five. It's going to five. So yeah, no one's using PayPal. No. So the numbers, eBay. Hurt them bad. I don't know if you guys know, but eBay and PayPal split many years ago, but then they are completely split in terms of their relationship. So their numbers were hurt dramatically from the eBay, basically, you know, situation. And that's going to go away in 3Q. So starting in a couple quarters from now, they're not going to have that drag on their business. Because right now their numbers are dragged down by, oh, you guys used to get all this revenue from eBay. Now you're not. The other thing they got coming for them is Venmo and the Amazon deal, which is going to be huge in my opinion. So that's coming likely in the next quarter or two.
Okay, we got to back up. What happened between eBay and PayPal?
So
I don't know.
eBay decided a couple years ago they were going to start going with their own payment processor. And so they said, we don't want to use you anymore, PayPal, as our kind of default. Because if you remember, it used to be PayPal owned eBay. They were like the same company, essentially. And then they split off. They became their own company. So now eBay's its own company. PayPal's its own company. And then as far as eBay looked at it, and they're like, we can make more money if we just don't use PayPal as kind of our default payment process or anything like that. So that hurts PayPal short term, but that stops hurting them, according to the CEO, in two quarters from now. Mm. So all of a sudden, their numbers start looking like re-accelerated growth. Everything starts getting rosy.
Where is the growth coming from to make up for the lack of eBay sales?
Just PayPal in general. And then I think a lot of the growth later on is going to come from that Amazon deal.
Yeah. Which and
is
crypto.
The Amazon deal? Too. Imagine Jeremy's like, I don't know.
Yeah, so the Amazon deal is Venmo, is essentially like, you know, Amazon's going to start using Venmo. But no one knows this specific date. We just know it's coming in 22. So at some point, like that could be, imagine, you know, you want to buy something on Amazon, you can just buy it through Venmo. Mm. That's a pretty darn cool thing, right? I'm sure there's a good amount of people out there that will do that because Venmo is usually the second most popular app in the entire United States of
America.
You're
saying that they would just use it within Amazon?
Yes, correct. So right now, you know, instead of like having a credit card,
I feel
or whatever,
like that's not
you can
a problem that needs to be solved.
I was
I
about
love
to
Amazon's
say, what's the advantage? Yeah. Unless it's for gosh, like I payment protection, but you're not dealing with like a lot of these sellers like eBay where it's like they're going to ship you something.
A lot of people just like to use Venmo to pay for stuff. Same thing with PayPal, actually. You know, I've been in business for a while and we gave the option to pay through PayPal or pay through like a credit card or something like that. And you'd be surprised at how many people choose to pay with PayPal.
Got it.
So I'm sure if Venmo's the second most popular app in the entire United States of America, I'm sure there's going to be a decent amount of people that choose, hey, I want to pay through Venmo. So
I'm shocked. Yeah. Because I just wouldn't see an advantage of using, like I use a credit card.
Yeah, me
Amazon.
Too.
You get cash back on that. It makes sense. Yep. Unless they offer some sort of similar thing for Venmo, like, you know, 6% cash back.
No.
Maybe they will, but it doesn't make sense for me. But,
yeah, no, for me too. I think it's going to be one of those things, but think about it.
It doesn't make sense, but it's going to be great.
No, think
it's
about it.
Boost their numbers.
Imagine 2% of people, right, that use it. Imagine what Amazon numbers are, and imagine if just 2% of people out through Venmo.
Sure. If instead of like all the credit card options you have, maybe the last one's like, oh, Venmo. Sure, why not? I've got some Venmo cash. Got it.
Yeah. So and some people prefer that. Not everybody's got credit cards like we do. We're big ballers, man. So
Interesting. Is it for the people that don't have credit cards?
Sometimes, And some people some people just have a workaround where they have Venmo, PayPal, but they don't have credit cards and things like that. So they prefer, like I said, I've been running businesses for a while and we gave, and I don't know if you guys do this for Bankroll Coffee. If you guys gave a credit card option and a PayPal option, you would be blown away by how many people use the PayPal option. And it's not hard to set up either.
Yeah, I think we have that. We have it set up. We even have it set up for Dogecoin.
Wow, that's random.
Yeah, I haven't tracked anything. What's up?
Did you see an increase in sales when you guys started integrating Dogecoin?
No.
No, not at all.
No.
Wow.
Mm-mm. I don't know how much Dogecoin we've accepted. I know if it were anything noteworthy, I would have heard about it.
You
I
might mean, be a Dogecoin millionaire. We just don't know it.
The IRS has entered the chat.
Yeah, no, as far as I'm aware, it did not make any difference. But what was surprising is that I believe it was either this or another product that we had was that we had the option where you could split up the payments like interest-free over the course of like 30 days. How many people use that?
I'm going to Bankroll Coffee right now. I'm going to see
a
this.
A firm you're talking about?
I don't know if it was a firm or another thing.
Wait a minute. First off, you guys should not be taking a firm for $4 coffee, okay? That's just... If somebody needs a firm for $4,
but you know what? No,
coffee,
but I have a partner who deals with all the back end stuff, and he was telling me how common it is for people to on cheap items, you know, under like $20, they'll use the buy now pay later, and they just prefer it because with $0 interest, they're like, it's just easier for me to pay like over a month or 2 months or whatever.
Even
if they have the cash available, it's like why not? It's free money. I may as well.
And then do most people pay it off or do they just pay it interest? Off. They pay
I can't see. I have to go through all the steps and whatnot. Okay. By the way, $12 for coffee, Graham, isn't that getting a bit expensive?
We have to raise prices.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be
a main channel video coming up probably in the next week or so. Yeah, we're waiting for our P&L for the full year.
Yep.
But coffee prices have gone up, I believe, like 80% year over year. Shipping has increased. So right now we're dealing with our coffee, I think, cost us $1.25, $1.30 more than it did last year. So that's an increase of like 25% on our end, just right off the bat for coffee. Plus, I think shipping is like an extra dollar an order. So we're taking a loss in both of those.
Do you have a rough idea of what your profit was?
In the very beginning, it was about $1 per bag on average. So if someone got 4 bags, it would be $4 on average of all the expenses. $12. Well, the cheapest is $9 to $12.
Wow.
Plus flat $5 shipping.
That's such a small margin.
But it is. But the $5 flat $5 shipping ruins it.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, because we don't make money in the shipping.
Right.
It's like the shipping's more than that. If you're on the East Coast, shipping is like $8.
You know what you got to do? You got to drop the cost of the coffee to like $3 and have your shipping be like $20.
You know what we could do? It would be amazing to test this out, but do free coffee. It's just $20 shipping.
Dude, people do that and they run successful businesses doing that.
I know.
It's nutty.
I know. That reminded me, they shut that down on Instagram. It's like, you know, you could get this free bracelet.
Yes.
Just claim it here, 50 available. $30 shipping and handling. But people pay it because, it's free.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, it's from Alibaba or AliExpress and it's, you know, like a $1 bracelet and shipping was like $5.
Yeah. So anyway. UPS, they reported this morning, stock made it over a 14% upward move, which is ridiculous.
Huge for UPS.
Yes.
Huge.
That thing is a turtle stock. Man.
I know. It's such a boring stock. Like, usually you'd expect, okay, 4 to 8% move, maybe. 14% was incredible. And Graham, you brought it up, you know, shipping costs going up. And that's benefiting UPS in a massive way.
Yeah, so Jeremy mentioned that to me. And I said, well, the one thing to keep in mind is that these increased shipping costs are getting passed on to the customer. But guess what's going to happen? If at some point shipping comes down, you think these companies are going to lower their prices? No.
Right.
If people are paying it, like I'm thinking for Bankroll Coffee, and I'm always like completely open about this, mm-hmm. but like we've been losing money, and if we could raise prices to the point where we don't lose money and shipping comes down or the price of coffee comes down, the companies don't lower their prices. They will keep them the same as long as they're selling, as long as people buy it.
As long as the demand is still there.
Right. Yeah. So it makes sense that whatever cost we get bumped up to is probably going to stay around there. And there's not going to be a lot of room for companies to reduce it,
sure.
especially if they've been operating at such tight margins. They'll feel like, well, now I'm finally getting to make some money. So we're going to keep it like this.
And that'll be especially made worse if interest rates go up for them. So that's what I'm curious about. How is that going to have a compounding effect on costs?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, what's your next business, Andre?
My next business?
Yeah, what do you think about doing?
High margin business, hopefully, which I think is software.
Software, okay.
Software, 100%.
That is
so. I'm constantly working on an app. I've been working on an app for over the past year.
Okay.
Yeah. So we finally hired a developer. Paid him $50,000 mm-hmm. to give us basically a prototype.
Okay.
So he's working on that right now. Nice. And very high profile person. I can't say like where he works, but I'm excited for that. And I'm trying to integrate a little bit of a crypto element into it. Where with NFTs, because NFTs are kind of like tokens that you can use, but without giving too much away, it'll have aspects of financial education along with crypto. So
So it's like YouTube.
Not quite YouTube. No, think about gamifying investing more so.
Oh, gamifying investing.
The
Senate just watched.
It's not an investing app. You're not going to be able to invest.
Is Vlad working on it?
Yeah, he's my developer.
Gamifying investing right over here.
Jeez. Well,
U.S. politicians.
Well, speaking of which, Jeremy, you have the mug here for the Hungry Bowl app. And by the way, I mean, we'll link to it down below in the description.
Am I getting
for
paid
anyone.
For this sponsorship? Because I'm not in this deal. Because those two own this app, and I have no shares in this idea.
You could link to your app down below in the description.
My app doesn't exist yet, so
it doesn't exist.
Let's create a little promise here. When the app is out, I can pump it here.
Okay. Pump the
pamp it.
Pamp it.
Deal. But how is the Hungry Bowl going? Because we've been working on this for over a year.
Yeah, it's tough, man. I mean, to get good developers right now, they have all the leverage, all the power. It's difficult. Really, really difficult. That's the hardest thing, to be honest, with the whole project is developers. They are in such a position of power. They have so many offers. They have so many things. And even if you try to beat out another person's offer, a lot of times they still don't care. They're like, I'm still doing this thing.
Developers go where projects are most exciting, I feel like, because their salaries are so high. Yeah. They want more upside. They don't care about the salary as much as they care about equity and what they're working on, which makes perfect sense. Yeah. That's what I would do, too. I would rather work on exciting projects that I see have a future that I maybe can negotiate some equity in. And that way, that's a huge, huge difference.
Yeah. Yeah, it's difficult. So we're working with the recruiter right now to try to find somebody. But then the recruiter gets a 25% fee.
Whoa.
Wow.
On everything.
Of their annual salary
for
or what?
A year. Yes.
Wow.
And that's customary
in
this industry.
Let's say you pay them equity. Does that recruiter get 25% of equity? There's no way.
No, just the flat fee. So let's say it's a $75 an hour developer, engineer, whatever, $100, $25 add on to that, recruiter. So
just give them a dollar base salary and then just give them like 1% equity. And
a lot of them don't want that. I've had discussions, if they want equity, they also still want a big salary because they're in that big of a position of power right now.
Equity is risky too. I mean, the equity could be worth nothing. And if you're at peak earnings right now and you could be like, I'm worth $300,000 a year. I don't want to take the risk of maybe earning $300,000 10 years from now. They want the money.
Yeah.
So that's the thing I underestimated when I started the project is just like how tough it is to get, good developers. It's a dang challenge. So something we're still working with, we're trying to get better data providers right now, which for this top tier data provider we want, it's $2,000 plus a month, plus a $2,000 a month. No, it's another company. plus another 2,000 a NASDAQ every month. Okay. I think it might be, actually. Polygon, yeah.
I told you about it.
Yeah. Yeah. We also talked about the other one, the X. It's like $5,000 a month just for top tier data.
It's expensive.
Yes,
man.
It's very
expensive. So that makes it so difficult for an app to take off because first you need the users, but in order to have the users, you have to have the data. So it's like a catch 22. You have to be paying a lot of money before you even have a user base. And that's the hard
part. But it's also competitive. You're competing with every other business out there who could do the same thing at the drop of a hat if they wanted to.
Here's the
thing. And they have a team that's already there.
I think with software, the hardest part is not creating a good app. I think that's the easy part. The hard part is marketing it, which is what you're really good at. Technically, as a YouTuber, you have the platform to market it. So I think if your app has a hard time taking off, I don't think it's a lack of, let's say, marketing, but more of a lack of...
Oh, 100%.
Is it something that the market needs or wants? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, for us, it's just that you know, to get the app to this place where it's better than everything else, or at least seen as good, that's the toughest part, and that's when the development comes in. Yeah. So that's just continues to be a work in progress. I can tell you, if I didn't have my platform and Graham and the other folks that are involved in the project, there's no way I would take on this.
Right.
Because you're looking at burning a minimum of 5 figures a month every month.
Yeah.
Minimum, you know, 15,000-20,000 a month.
He's talking about Tattoo Chef, by the way.
No, that's 15,000 to 20,000 a day. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Oh gosh.
If you want to take on Tattoo Chef, you got to be ready at minimum.
Five figures a month in losses. Yeah. I would take that. That wouldn't be bad. I think it's more like 6 figures a month. But so in all honesty, did you guys see Robinhood?
No, what happened?
So, and this is what happens when the market starts to turn, man. Robinhood reported earnings, I think it was on Thursday, right? Stock hits 9-something a share. Here today, it's 14 and some change. It's gone up over 45% in three trading days over 45% off awful earnings. It was so bad. But when you get these stocks that devastated, that it doesn't matter what the company says, which Robinhood's earnings were trash. Like, it was awful. Everything was awful. Like, they're due to bounce. And so 45% in three trading days, and that's what I've been trying to explain.
Because of them, that's the Apple effect. That's
not really so much that. It's all just a short covering, along with, you know, there starts to be so much, like everybody that's wanted to sell Robinhood sold that stock already.
Right.
So you kind of start to run out of any major selling pressure.
Yeah, that's the point. I forget who it is. Some analyst said that the point you're going to see a rebound is, like you said, when bad news comes out and there's no one left to sell it.
Right.
Yep. And that's the bottom right there. And I think we hit that for Robinhood.
Yeah.
In my opinion, there's no way a company like Robinhood was worth, you know, it was like $7 billion, $6 billion at their lowest. It was some absurd number.
I think it was under 10.
They're worth more than that. I mean, objectively, you could look at the amount of cash that they have and the amount of users.
What was their AUM? Do you know?
I cannot remember. Okay. They're all like, when I looked at the numbers, there was nothing to get excited about, though.
Yeah.
That I was like looking at them. I'm like, there's, but you know, did you just run out of sellers? SDC stock I started buying a few months ago. I was down about $40,000 at this time last week. Today I'm up $18,000.
Wow.
So from a $40,000 loss to $18,000 in a matter of a week. Smile Direct Club.
Okay.
So there's a stock that was being priced for like bankruptcy, and all they have to do is not go bankrupt, and you know that one's going to go crazy.
Isn't that kind of a risk though? It's a kind of a huge gamble.
Yeah, it's a big risk, and that's why I didn't go too crazy heavy in it, into it. I own probably like 60,000 shares, so not that much. But it's like a $1 stock or $2 stock,
dollar,
so it's not that much.
Yeah. When they traded 10 cents, it sounds like a lot.
Sounds like a big flex, but it's really not. But in terms of SDC, that's what happens to these stocks when you're max shorted. And I've been trying to tell people about this. Kathy Wood stocks, even. Everybody's max shorted the fund. Man, as soon as that market flips, you see these stocks move 30, 40, 50, 60, 70% in a matter of a week or two.
Yeah, but only because they drop so substantially.
Do you think there's a potential fake out, though? Do you think the market could still potentially go lower?
That's definitely... You know,
it seems like
a
crazy amounts of volatility in the market right now. Just like every day the sellers are like, I told you so.
But here's the
and
thing.
The buyers are like, see, I told you so.
But
it's every day.
But you got to kind of think of like the fear in the market. And I think we've removed a lot of that fear for the time being because everyone was worried
about
the Fed.
Just wait till March.
Pretty much. I mean, that's what happened. Everyone was worried about this Fed meeting coming up, and are they going to hike rates, and how bad is inflation, and inflation is going to be even worse than it was in December. Could there be 5 rate hikes? Is there a 0.5%? Like, I feel like all of that, we've already accepted that, like, hey, there's a chance we'll see 0.5%. Inflation's going to be bad.
Right.
So I'd say between now and March, unless something happens that we can't predict, which is always a chance of that.
So the Fed still didn't give us very clear guidance on how many rates are going to increase.
They're not going to, though. I mean, they would never give us guidance like that this early on.
That would be wonderful if they could at least say, hey, my next target is 0.25%. Just beware. Yeah. But they still have us guessing, which is silly.
That's the point. Well, but that leaves them open to make a move.
Yeah. You know? That's the thing. Let's say things deteriorate with underlying economy. You know, for instance, or inflation goes way down.
No, that's fine. But then adjust at that point. But at least give guidance. That way the market could price it in and not be scared.
They don't care about the market pricing it in now. They're not like, oh, yeah, so the S&P could trade down a little bit. Let's just say 0.5. Get the worst out of the way. And then we'll
You know what's messed up? They know it. Like, Jerome must know exactly what he's going to do.
Yeah, that's why I think he's so careful about it. He's so careful about not giving any guidance and being very, like, abstract in the way he speaks.
Do you think he's invested in the markets? Is he allowed
to?
He's allowed to.
He should be invested in the markets.
Because you know how when these brokerage apps make you register, they ask you, are you a registered member?
Oh,
so I'm kind of curious what his limitations or responsibilities are in this case. Is he... responsible for disclosure, or is he limited to a certain amount? Because he knows full well what's going to happen in March, at least some idea.
That's interesting. I don't know. Yeah. You should look up his trades.
Yeah, is that even publicly available?
Maybe. Huh. I don't know.
There's only one new video person that would know the answers to these questions.
Who?
I don't know. Anyways,
who is it, Jeremy?
I don't know, man. There's one person I know. There's one person. I think people watching know who that one person is. No, there's another person.
Is
Jerome
Powell
person
watching this?
Could you imagine?
He's a subscriber.
This is his favorite channel on YouTube. It's like, I watch one channel only. Is Millennial Money.
I love watching how wrong they are.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. He goes home to his wife. Hey, honey, guess what the guys in Millennial Money just said? We're going to raise rates a little higher. Prove them wrong.
He's a premium member.
He's in the Smash Squad. He always smashes for us.
Good, good.
Thank you, J-Pal.
You can probably treat yourself to an ad-free upgrade, or at least grab an extra latte. After getting a Chime checking account with features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe, no minimum balance requirements, and no monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/goals24. That's chime.com/goals24. Chime. Feels like progress. Banking services and debit card provided by Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So, but anyways, you get in this type of market where you're getting a lot of conflicting data. And I think that's what's causing a lot of the volatility. Now, Starbucks just reported earnings. So confusing. Like, they had good parts of their earnings. They had bad parts of their earnings. Obviously, inflation's hurting them. Wages going up are hurting them. But their revenue growth was some of the strongest you've seen from Starbucks in a long time. But that was in the US. But China numbers were awful. But they're saying that's because of Omicron. So you're like, oh my gosh, it's like so many puts and takes. And it's like, this is really good, but this is not good. This is really good, this is not good. And it's like, well, this might be something short term. This might go away. That's what's causing this volatility. Yeah. So many moving
parts.
What's
interesting? I was actually doing research on this today to find the historical data of like what happens after a correction. I can't remember exactly, but when the S&P had a drop of more than 10% in one quarter, the next quarter in all quarters dating back from 1990, with the exception of 2001, after 9/11, was up 7% in the following quarter. So after a 10% drop, the next quarter up 7%. Year over year, after a 10% drop, the market increases an average of 18%.
Wow.
So after a 10, oh, sorry, that was after a 10 to 15% drop.
Yeah. Wow, after a 10, okay. So this is something I just pulled up, and I know Alex will pop it on the screen, but everybody is hedged for a crash. This came out yesterday. Somebody sent this to me. Goldman Sachs says they've been averaging, there's been an average of $1 trillion worth of puts, which is essentially betting a stock's going to go down per day, which is by far the largest record. It's just gone off the charts, essentially, Andre. Yeah. Look at that.
Wow.
So everybody's hedged for a crash, and if everybody's hedged
so
for a crash...
So smart money is at least hedged for a crash.
No, that's everybody. Retail bought puts.
Oh, that's
puts.
Retail, too.
Yeah, retail bought puts at the highest level they've ever seen over the past 2 weeks, essentially.
Got it.
The previous week and the previous week. So... Jeremy,
do you think that Apple potentially might be a false flag in the sense of like this false sense of security with supply chains? Because weren't you the one that said last week that Apple was kind of insulated from supply chain problems? Like they're handling it in their own way that doesn't affect them as much as the rest of the market. So do you think this could be like a potentially, you know, a fake out?
Yeah, it's a potential. But I think it was big for the market just to hear that supply chain's getting better. Right. And at the end of the day, Apple's, you know, if we think about them, they're probably one of the more complex organizations. So if things are getting better for them, they're probably getting better for everybody else. Maybe not at the same rate, but if that's the trend, that's a really good trend. Right?
I want to show you this. I thought this was really funny. So I posted on Instagram yesterday and I did a story. You guys have seen the story.
I think I voted on it.
Yeah. Okay, good. And I said, when the market was up 1.21% yesterday, I said, did we hit a bottom?
Right.
62% said no, we did not hit a bottom, meaning we're going to drop lower.
Yep.
And then the next story I posted a few hours later, I said, the more people believe that we have not hit a bottom means we're more likely to have actually hit a bottom, right? 65% agreed with that. Yeah. It literally flipped. So 62% think we're going to go lower, but 65% also agree that if they think they're going to go lower, we've already hit the bottom.
It's like, hey, do you think the market's going to go down? Yep. No, it's going up.
Yeah.
it reminds me of this. I forget what the term is called. It's a term in psychology, but they asked a group of people. They said, do you think you are a better driver than the average? And something like 80% of people said they're better than the average. Sure. It just goes to show you it's, you know, or if you ask, are you smarter than the average person?
Right.
80% of people believe, yes, I'm smarter than the average, even though only 50%.
I'm going to do a story in the meantime on asking my audience on Instagram, did the stock market bottom? And then at the end of this episode, we'll look at it and we'll see if the data correlates with what Graham
has. Well, then I'll say, did we hit a crypto bottom?
Okay.
I'll run the story. So what you're saying, Graham, is that because of the enormous amount of short interest that we're seeing in the market, that on average, the market is probably wrong and it's not going to go down. It's probably going to go up.
Yes. And the only reason I say this is because a lot could be priced in. So the more people believe that the market's going to drop, they'll take an action to prevent their position from dropping even further. So that means that by doing so, it's already priced in the market.
Right. All right, let's put this quiz together.
Oh, you know what it's called? For that term, it's called the observer effect, because when you could observe something happening, you could take action to prevent that. It's like if I told you right now that you're not going to subscribe, you're not going to do it. You're not going to subscribe. So I've already told you you're not going to subscribe, but you could prove me wrong because you know that now by subscribing, and then you've proved me wrong that you're going to subscribe. So,
could they double prove you wrong by also hitting the notification bell? Would that be a double, or is that even possible?
Yeah, that'll really prove me wrong.
That would really prove you wrong.
Really, like I'd be completely wrong if you.
Yeah, like there's no way they could subscribe, hit the notification bell,
and become a premium member.
We're gone. Okay, we got too far. Too far, Andre. Too far.
Never go too far.
Yeah.
So, where were we at there, gentlemen?
You guys were pulling up. Oh, you
market
doing,
market bottom. Yeah, because you think about it, right? There was a big hedge fund conference last week, and I think I brought this up. And from what I heard out of that hedge fund conference from people that were there, they couldn't find anybody bullish on the market. No one bullish at a hedge fund conference, right? We know how retail's been feeling. Graham did the poll, right? Feeling much more bearish than bullish, whereas last year at this time is a very different vibe. So, and we see that the activity, buying puts at record levels last 2 weeks, selling out of stocks completely, people have basically prepped for a crash. And if everybody's prepping for a crash, probably not going to get a crash.
You know what? You know what's nuts?
Crashes usually come when you're not expecting it.
When the market was really down, I'm talking like at the low point, when my portfolio, like I lost over $1 million, I think in like a month and a half.
It was probably last Monday.
Yeah. And I remember talking to Alex, and I showed Alex I was down like $200,000 on a day so far. And I remember that feeling of just like, you know what? Should I just sell and lock in my gains right now? And then I don't have to worry. I guess you get those feelings every now and then. And Alex was like, you know what? Like, I've been up and like I could sell right now. Just at least I could lock in my gains and I don't have to lose money. And I remember that feeling. And I remember that feeling specifically because every time I've had that feeling or I've questioned, no, I shouldn't do that because it's going to drop lower, is the time to hold and buy more.
Wow. Right. Yeah. When you start getting scared like that.
And I feel like people that are on the wealthier side tend to feel that effect a lot more. Because usually the wealthier people are not in wealth grow mode. They're in wealth preservation mode. So you must feel those emotions a lot stronger than somebody who's still accumulating, which is interesting to someone. Never mind. We won't go there.
No. So, I mean, I don't know. I can kind of beg to differ because, you know, imagine you're somebody with $10 million or whatever, right? Or $20 million, whatever the amount is. You kind of look at it and it's like, it's not the end of the world if you go down short term. Is somebody with maybe 10,000 who's gone from 10,000 to 5,000, is like maybe that's their only money, right? That's their only safety net. I think those folks are also very likely to maybe panic sell because they're like, I'm down to my last $5,000 here. If the stocks keep going down, I'm not going to have any safety egg, right? Because a lot of people use their investment accounts, including myself back in the day, as their kind of nest egg.
I think that's true for the beginner investor who just got started with the market. But somebody who's at least understood how the market works with just buying and holding, they wouldn't do that. And I feel like it's the people with the $30 million net worth that can afford to sit out for a couple months. Because if they lose opportunity of making a couple million dollars, that doesn't matter so much to them. They can sit it out for a little
bit. But you know what? But that's what hedge funds do. Sure. Hedge funds really try to limit the downside. And that's why a lot of them underperform. Because they're like, you know what? We don't want our client worth $100 million losing 30% of it in a year. That's 100%. Too much. So, we might not optimize all the gains, but at least if the market goes down, they're losing 10% instead of 30. So I think at a certain point, it starts to make sense. You hedge your bets, you play it a little safer, and even if you lose out on some opportunity cost, if that's for peace of mind, it's for peace of mind.
Sure. Well, here's a crazy theory. Have you guys thought about, you remember when the yield curve inverted in 2020, I believe?
Yep.
And now inverted yield curves, just for anyone who doesn't understand what they are, it's when the interest rate of short-term bonds grows more or is more than 30-year bonds or long-term bonds. Now, when that happens, it signals to investors that we're due for a correction, for a recession. You know, and they've predicted in the last 50 years, like 9 out of 10 or 11 of them, something ridiculous. Now, when we got that inverted yield curve in 2019 or 2020, we followed that with the Roni Rona. Mm-hmm. Now, an inverted yield curve can't predict a pandemic like that. That's not how it works. So I'm curious that if the pandemic potentially postponed the recession we were meant to have, because that was the 10-year cycle, essentially, because economies correct roughly every 10 years. And we were due for a correction at that period of time. Mm-hmm. And the yield curve told us, yes, we are.
But the yield curve
is a relatively reliable indicator. We got the Roni Rona. We got an injection of stimulus money, which postponed the recession we were supposed to have. So are we due for another one? Because that yield curve is flattening again.
I think the yield curve has only been right in like 75% of scenarios. And
I think it's a little bit more.
But I think it's 75, but even let's say 80, it's still 1 out of 5 times it's incorrect.
I think it's a little bit more. I think it's closer to, let's look it up right now.
No, regardless, that's an interesting statistic. If it's way more right than wrong, and I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, it is more right than wrong, but it's not 100%. And there have been times where the yield curve is inverted and nothing has happened. And that was where I came up with that point about the observer effect, in that when the yield curve inverts, investors could take action ahead of time to prevent that from causing a drop in prices.
Yeah, that's another one of those factors. I think it's just like, I don't want to call it a waste of time to pay attention to, but it's like another one of those, oh, it's so scary. The yield curve inverted, you know? And the Fed, all this stuff to me at the end of the day is just kind of like a drama show. Because I, you know, being doing this for so long, like all these things come in flows. And next thing you know, everybody's talking about a presidential election. Next thing everybody's talking about, you know, what China's going on and all the growth is slowing in China. All these things go in cycles. And then all of a sudden they go away for a year or two. You know what it was before Rona? You know, and obviously this never became anything, but Ebola. I remember Ebola caused the market to drop dramatically. This was either 2014 or 2015. No.
Oh, that was Salmonella, right?
Was it Salmonella?
What did I thought Chipotle had some sort of thing in their lettuce.
Yeah, no, big thing.
Was that even what?
Yeah. No, this is a different thing. But I remember being in Charlotte, North Carolina, watching CNBC, and the market went through this, like, a few weeks span.
I'm an idiot. Alex, just edit that out.
No, Alex, keep it in. Keep it in.
So, Alex, you could edit that out.
No, Alex.
You
Alex.
Guys are leaving. Alex, I'm in control of the edits
here. Your salary's three ways. Two people voted against it. Okay, Alex, remember that, all right?
The inverted yield curve has consistently predicted a recession each of the five times in the last five decades. That was a 2019 article, to be fair.
I don't know. They do selectively pick certain dates.
If you're looking at it from the 70s, then it's predicted all of them. So, I mean, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, so looking back on this, because I was like, I remember being in my apartment in Charlotte, North Carolina in 2014 and this Ebola thing. And so, yeah, Ebola caused the market at that time. It tumbled 8% from its highs it had reached previously.
Okay.
Everybody freaked out over this Ebola thing, like it was going to like take over the world and whatnot. Sure. Obviously, it didn't happen.
Sure.
But it caused the market to freak out.
What year was this?
It was in 2014.
2014,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, and so I think that... And that's why when I first started hearing about Rona, I didn't take it super serious because I was like, what is this? Is this another Ebola thing? Like, what is going on here? Obviously, it became more of a serious situation. The world obviously took it super serious. But at first, I was very skeptical when I first started hearing about it, which was probably January or February of 2020.
I was too.
Because it was like, okay, I remember the Ebola thing. And I was like, what's the big deal with this? Yeah. And then obviously, you know, next thing you know, they were shutting down the global economy. But anyways, these things just go in cycles. And we're going to have in the future, there's going to be another, not maybe Rona scare, but there's going to be something disease related that's going to freak the market out in the short term. And it will not be a once in a 100-year pandemic, but people will get scared. The market will sell off 5, 10, 15, 20% because of that. And, everything goes in cycles.
I mean, the counter argument to that is if we have enough of these variants that the market might just become immune to it and be like, oh, I know how this story is going to play out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's almost how it was slightly with Omicron, but also there's another variant now of Omicron. It's like a B2 variant that's supposed to be spread 1.5 times more
than Omicron.
And nobody's heard about it because I just think it's gotten to a point where it's, yeah.
So. Yeah, even early last year, there was so many. I remember I'd read up on them, and some of them sounded much scarier than anything we've had. Where it's like, oh my gosh, but you know.
So basically, one of the biggest, I guess, indicators to seeing if a recession is going to happen is just to follow the interest rates, because Jerome Powell's job is to balance interest rates with employment, right?
Yeah.
So if that affects employment and the middle class start to lose their jobs, that's potentially probably the biggest indicator of a possible recession.
Well, I think in my personal opinion, don't look at government data, actually. I think government data...
Well, I'm not saying look at government data.
Okay. Well, I meant anything the Fed, you know, the Fed's technically, I guess, not the government, but I look at the Fed as a government as well.
Yeah.
I say the Fed, the government, everything. They're always looking at usually backwards looking indicators rather than the future and kind of what's going on. I think actually much more important is pay attention to UPS earnings. UPS is a company that does business all over the globe, right? There's not going to be one specific thing that's going to make UPS's business go up outside of the global economy being in a strong spot. If that's not happening, UPS is not thriving, right? It's not like Apple could come out with some big iPhone and it's like, well, maybe just Apple numbers are good. It's UPS.
I don't know, man. I think that's oversimplifying the economy down to one stock. Like, oh, you want to predict a recession? Look at UPS.
Yeah.
No, I don't know about that.
I think it's, in my personal opinion, it's one of the most important. I think that you can look at the rail companies, but the problem with the rail companies is a lot of them are just very, you know, like US related, right?
Yeah.
I think a company like UPS, they see everything coming in on a daily basis. And UPS got it for a very strong 22, and they just upped their dividend by 50%, which is a huge dividend raise there. So, I mean, you know, I don't want to get ultra bullish about the economy, but that was something I looked at, and I was like, dang, man, UPS wouldn't just come out and have that strong guidance, raise their dividend 50%, unless they were pretty darn confident 22 is going to be a very, very good year. So...
I'm just looking at my parents, the middle class. I'm like, hey, guys, are you guys okay? Is your job still intact? Is your pay still all right? Because Vegas and, you know, like Hawaii, places like that, those are the places that are first to go. It's the entertainment class, and that's the first domino to fall.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I'm looking. But
yeah, I got a last-minute reservation at SW Steakhouse the other night.
STK or what?
SW Steakhouse at the Wynn. I was amazed at that. Last minute, I had to get it like right when they opened at 5:30. But I was surprised I got anything. I called the day before.
Were you like, I've got half a million subscribers.
Jeremy. That's not a senior text.
Yeah, the market's been a little rough, Graham. I can't really pay for $150 dinners right now, but you know. So, but anyways, yeah. So I was down the strip, and it looked. Yeah, it didn't look busy, but it didn't look dead. That's what I thought because we drove around. I just want to see like you know what's going on out there, and it didn't look busy, didn't look dead. And Rona numbers have been sky high recently, so I'm going to pay attention more in March.
Have you guys noticed the local real estate here? We're getting a lot of new listings recently. Like I'm watching the market, and we're getting a lot more new listings. I remember we used to get like 10 a day, maybe. Now I'm seeing like 5 to 10 every 3 hours.
I think it's getting to a point where sellers are feeling more comfortable about selling, or if someone's thinking about moving, there's more inventory, so they could sell their house, but then they have a place to move to. Because before last year, it was so difficult. Like people couldn't sell because you'd be like, "Well, I would sell," and then in between the time where I need to buy something else, prices will have gone up another 6%, and then I'll buy less house.
What about mortgage forbearance protection? Is that over?
Pretty much. Almost everybody, as far as I'm aware, the numbers went down to basically nothing. I mean, it's not nothing. It's like 1.5-2%.
That's part of it. I mean, I'm sure evictions are going up, too. People are finally, you know, being evicted and foreclosures, and we can start to have those.
Who did I speak with? I spoke with a property manager about evictions. He said that at least in California, that a lot of those tenants were getting their rent paid through a program. I'm not entirely familiar with it. But that the tenants that are behind on the rent can apply, and that money is sent directly to the landlord, almost no strings attached. Because I got a property manager now on another property. And
have you noticed in any of your properties people stop paying? Or
one tenant. They've been a problem since the very... So I've had them since 2015, and they have been a nuisance. Well, I don't know if there's no way they're watched. Just watch them watch this. But anyway, they know what they've done. I don't want to say they trashed it, but like they... And well, I may as well just tell you guys, but they started parking like 3 or 4 like really beat up cars in the front. They backed up those cars like into the fence. They ruined the fence. They hit the tree in front. Their fence in the back, they've let it just completely deteriorate. They started renting it out on Airbnb without my knowledge.
Oh my God.
The other tenants let me know about that. I reached out to them. They completely ghosted me. They started paying their rent again, then they caught back up, and then they fell behind. I mean, it's just...
How are you like with subleasing? Like if a tenant reached out to you and were like, Graham, kind of having a hard time making my payments, but I have an opportunity with Airbnb, would you allow them to run one, or are there any circumstances where you would consider it?
No. Just because of the wear and tear for something like that and the complaints that I got from it's a multi-unit.
Okay.
So the complaints that I've got from the other tenants were pretty gnarly.
Got it.
And just the noise, the constant, you know, goings and comings and just parking random stuff in front and just had nothing but bad experiences. Okay. I'm sure there are examples where it might work,
Speaking of real estate, do you guys think it's a good time to buy now or wait?
I think unless you have to buy because you need a family house, I think it makes sense to wait right now. So, and most people I know that are really, you know, I would call them experts on the Vegas real estate market. Most of them say, hey, you know, right now it's kind of a wait and see, you know, because the market's just gone crazy. You know, here in this community, my wife was just at the park and she said that to get those last bunch of houses, you have to put down $100,000 deposit just to get on the bid list. So now they're starting to bid off the properties. Because they have that much demand.
Oh my God.
So you need
for
to
new
put,
construction.
Yes.
Are you talking about like luxury though?
No, for here, this community.
Wait.
So that's luxury.
$100,000 to bid?
To bid. Yes. $100,000 to bid. And then you still got to try to bid up the property, but that's how much demand they have. No, I'm guessing, you know, I don't even want to put a guess on it.
I have a strategy I want to run by you guys that I'm considering doing that I haven't done that I want to do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm afraid that real estate could potentially go lower as interest rates will go up. So is it worth appraising my property now, right? Pulling out 80%. So let's say I at least get $600,000 out of my property. If I invest it into a stable coin like USDC, so it's not going to fluctuate. I'm liquid and I can get 8% APY on that money. That's about $4,000 a month. I could use that money to then pay down the mortgage on the new loan. Is that a smart decision?
I would refinance because I do think it's smart to lock it in now.
Yeah.
Prices could continue to go up. Why take the risk? You have a good opportunity right now. Right. Prices are high relative to where you bought it. Do it. Refinance, take the money. personally, I wouldn't put it all in stablecoins because I think it just takes one event, one brokerage that doesn't allow you to withdraw transactions, some sort of regulatory, something comes on. You know, like let's say this executive order all of a sudden freezes stablecoins because they need to be audited or
right.
I don't know.
Right.
There goes all your money.
Right.
So I don't see a harm, honestly, in like 10 to 25% of that in a stable coin at 8 to 12% or whatever. I wouldn't put the whole thing. If it were me, I would take 10% stable coin, the rest of it just index fund and leave it. And then just pay down your mortgage as usual. That's what I would do.
It's tempting not to put it all into a stable coin. But if anything, if I'll wait, I might just wait with that cash until that executive order.
The other option, you just keep it paid off. And you have zero stress.
Yeah,
and
that's
zero
the other
worry
option.
In the world.
Also, but it's keeping so much money locked into a non-productive asset.
I have an
asset.
Idea for you, Andre.
What's that?
You can take that.
I'm not going to buy your plaid.
No. I have a much better idea.
Buy a Planet 13?
Yes. You take that money. You put a third in the Planet, a third in Tattoo Chef, a third in Honest. You make a 3X over the next 5 years, and you're looking pretty good, okay? Direct financial advice to you, Mr. Andre. So
that is not for entertainment purposes.
That was not for entertainment, Andre. That was direct, the most direct financial advice. Give me your phone. I'll do it right now.
Yeah, okay? We need to cue sarcasm. We got sarcasm.
Every stock I've ever bought when Jeremy's like, it's a great value, has been down more than 25%.
One stock, Andre.
No,
okay?
It's Corsair.
Corsair.
And PayPal when you mentioned it.
Hey, I wouldn't buy PayPal, so that didn't count, okay?
Yeah, but it only counts if it's a great value. I'm like, I think I'm going to buy it today.
It is a great value.
Was that 200?
No, it was around $100, $200, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, anything under 200
thanks,
is a
Jeremy.
Great value. Oh, man. Yeah, Andre, about Bitcoin? You told me to get in, it was $60,000.
I did not tell you to get in at $60,000.
You told me it was $69,000.
It was a great deal at
60,000. No,
you said 69 is such a sexy number. You buy it at 69,000.
That was a joke. I would have never told you to get in at 69. I told you, I begged you to get in at 30. I was like,
I don't remember that.
Yeah, that's
when
I begged Graham to get in at 30, and he listened, and you did not.
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
I remember something about 60, anyways.
I've been buying NFTs, so as you know.
No, you're still doing it?
I'm still doing
it.
I actually just bought one for $30,000.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. That's crazy. You guys think I'm nuts. But
well, no. I mean, it's not like a crazy number, right?
Yeah.
Of your net worth. Like, if that's like your entire pie, that'd be a different situation.
So. But between my OMI crypto, which is the collectibles, it's up. It's doing great. Between OMI and between my NFT collectibles, I'm a little over $500,000.
Wow.
Yeah. So $500,000 in that, $500,000 in stocks, essentially.
Okay.
My stock portfolio is about $500,000.
Yep.
I want to say $800,000 to $1 million in real estate. That's my house.
Yep.
And then another $1 million in crypto.
Okay.
Yeah. Not counting.
Are you taking NFTs bigger? Much bigger? Or is it you kind of keep
only specific
there?
Ones. I'm not like speculating on the Bored Apes, which have gone like insanely.
I've been watching the prices of those.
You know why that happens, by the way? The floor is like 116 ETH right now.
Oh my gosh.
It's because ETH went down to like roughly $2,500. So when the underlying like crypto falls, everyone starts to just buy up all the NFTs. And so the floor prices just get dried up.
Oh, I see. And then when ETH starts going back up,
exactly.
All of
people
these
sell.
Are kind of,
yes.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
So my fans are more bullish than your fans, Graham. 56% say the stock market has bottomed. 56%. Ooh. So.
But that's not
that's
fair.
That's on a different day.
That's not fair. Yeah, it's a different day.
Oh, it's only one day off.
58% of my audience says crypto has not hit a bottom.
Oh, wow. So more bearishness on the crypto.
More bearish on
that's
crypto.
Interesting. But again, that
makes
I
sense.
Think the more people believe we have not hit a bottom, the more likely we are to have hit a bottom.
That's true.
Let us know what you think down below in the comments, if that's true for you. If you think we've hit a bottom, if you think we're going to go even higher from now, let us know what you think over the next week. And make sure to prove me wrong by subscribing, because I don't think you're going to subscribe. I don't think you're going to do it. You're not going to do
it. Get the premium subscription, too.
And hit the notification bell.
Yes.
Because that is huge.
Pow. Huge. Thank you guys so much for watching. And also a big thank you again to FTX. If you guys want to check them out, their link is down below in the description. They're a fantastic app. They just raised that $400 million. You may as well try them out. Thank you guys so much for watching. And until next time.
Peace out, you guys.
Cool.
Spring is in full bloom. Are your finances? With the Chime Secured Credit Builder Visa credit card, you can build credit with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments, all with no annual fees or interest. With Chime's secure credit card, you can start improving your credit scores right away. Get started today at chime.com/build. That's chime.com/build. Chime feels like progress. The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal and OTC advance fees may apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.